I have this really cool, I think it's British, but I'm not sure. I've never heard of it. It's called Boobaloo
What a hutta? Boo boo boo
Boo.
boo.
And it's marshmallow with chocolate flavored coating, because not real chocolate, and strawberry gummy.
Oh.
But I love marshmallow and I love strawberry and I wish it was dark chocolate
And you love
flavoring covering, but
a boobaloo
I'm gonna find out if I'm gonna love Boobaloo Boo.
Balls, a supernatural podcast with Lizzie and Missy.
Hi, Liz.
Hello, Miss. Long
How
time
are
no
you?
see.
Oh, I know. Well, you can't see me right now, so it's even longer.
I know. I put the camera on, which I don't know why. I mean, I didn't shower, but I put on a cute top, so it's fine.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I also did not shower, did not put on a cute top, but it's just a pain in the ass for me to get the camera from the laptop now, since I'm docked and have two monitors.
Oh, yes, that's right. I completely forgot.
So yeah, we just saw each other the other day for Hunter Happy Hour.
I know, which was a lot of fun. I was really happy. It seemed like everybody was kind of participating, which was even more fun, and your ring light was gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. It was more like Hunter Happy Hour and a half. I think we could have kept going.
We could if we wanted to, but I don't want to, kill a good thing.
Yeah, I don't want to overstep and then no one wants to come back. That wouldn't be good.
But is there any housekeeping thingies?
I did want to mention real quick that we have a Buy Me a Coffee account now, which we call Buy Us a Beer. We've had a couple people use it, which is awesome.
So far, yes, awesome. Thank you guys so much for those that have actually donated so far. Thank you, thank you, thank you, because that helps us keep this going because a lot of the places we're using right now have limits on what your free account can have.
Yeah, less features. Yeah. So if you don't know what a Buy Me a Coffee account is, it's like I'm sure everybody's heard of Patreon because a lot of people use that. It's just a different version of it. You can give a make like a one-time donation or like a tip kind of thing instead of having to be locked into like a monthly membership, which hopefully soon we will do that. If you want more from us, we'll have members only content like possibly some things we kicked around before were like a newsletter or like when we get a logo to have stickers and like a quarterly Zoom call where we can all talk to each other. But that's a little, I think that's a little bit down the road. But in just so like a one-time donation, like a $5 little thing, and all the money that we get through the Buy Me a Coffee goes directly back into the podcast, whether it's for equipment or for just trying to cover the monthly fee for our host, stuff like that.
Yeah, because
Just
as of
you.
right now, obviously, you guys can tell we don't have any commercials or sponsorships, which we're hoping to work on. We've been applying to some, but we don't have any right now. So we have no means. This is all coming out of our pockets to do this because we love it.
We do, yes.
Anything else? Anything new going on in your life?
No. I got nothing. Not that I can think of. What about you?
Obviously, you can hear my dogs.
Yeah.
I'm recording right now.
Could you guys be quiet? Didn't you see the light? The light says on
He
air.
says, I don't need a recording studio for myself or anything. I need a recording studio for to get away from my dogs. Obviously, now Tallahassee's trying to climb in my lap. Hi. No, there's nothing too new here. Let's see. I'm trying to think what's going on in my life.
I guess my big news is I got a ring light. That's
You
probably
did.
the only thing that happened.
You are far more fancy than I am.
I got some Amazon money for Christmas and I'm thinking, what am I going to buy off Amazon? Because you can literally get anything. And I was like, I want a ring light just for S's and G's.
It looks good, believe me, because
Thanks.
I little to my knowledge, my dad was watching over my brother's shoulder for like a hot minute of Hunter Happy Hour. Because also little known fact, my brother was participating. I didn't call him out, but I did say hi, but I wasn't like little brother, which I usually do. But my dad even complimented your lighting and also poo-pooed my lighting and my extremely red face for my shitty lighting and my Irish heritage.
I did not mean to make you look bad in front of your family.
It's okay. Didn't know they were all just gonna jump on for that one, so that's cool. I also don't really drink in front of my family, and even though I only had a glass of wine and like the cocktail, it was still strange.
I think the ring light can help with
I'm hoping. At least maybe like a I can maybe blue light it so you can't notice how red my face is. But
that's what I did. My face is naturally red whether I'm drinking or not. So
I can literally have a sip of alcohol and my face will just cherry itself out. Mm-hmm. And it's also real bad if I'm at the gym because it takes me like maybe 10 minutes running or lifting and I look like I'm dying.
Yeah. Oh, I'm the same way.
And then it stays red. Yeah. So I guess my big news is my mom listens to the podcast and my dad apparently was watching Hunter Happy Hour. So that's cool. The family business.
I think your mom liked the Hunter Happy Hour Instagram TV.
Oh, she goes on and occasionally watches it. Cause like I said, she called me out for my biggest critiques are my family. Let's put it that way. Cause she was the one that was like, maybe next time you should pull your hair back so you stop playing with it. And I was like, okay.
What I'm getting is you need to work on it and they think I'm adorable.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. They've decided that they would like to adopt you and I got kicked out.
I'm sorry, Liz.
It's fine. But other than that, yeah, Hunter Happy Hour was fun. I got nothing too excited. Unfortunately, this episode for me, I don't know about your fun facts and tiddly bits, but mine is very much going back to school. So I hope everybody's ready to learn things like history class.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
So what episode are we talking about?
So this episode we are talking about is season 3, episode 12, Juice and Bello. Not to be confused with Juice and Bello.
I had to write it down next to it so I didn't say Juice and Bello.
But it's Juice and Bello. And this episode came out February 21st, 2008.
Hey, this is going to air February 21st, 2021.
We're on a roll! And this takes place in Monument, Colorado.
Oh, there are a lot of monuments in Monument, Colorado.
I figured that's where it got its name, but I wasn't 100% sure. But that's the episode we're talking about. Yay! I mean, it's not as exciting for me as, you know, this is kind of like a wolf's and This is like a wolf in sheep's clothing. I guess that would be a whoops.
A whoops.
Would it be a whoops?
An oops.
A wolf in sheep's clothing. If you were to combine a wolf and a sheep, would it be a weep?
A weep. Oh, it just got sad.
I mean, I think it's sad if there's a wolf in sheep's clothing because you can't trust it.
That's true.
All right. So should we just kind of jump on in?
You want me to give you the plot?
Yes. Give me a good plot for Juice and Bello.
I give you a good plot.
Yes.
Sounds like it could be dirty.
Hit me.
Smack, smack.
No, not like that. Not physical.
I'll hit you with the weep. Okay. Sam and Dean break into Bella's apartment in Monument, Colorado to get the colt back, but she is tipped off. Wait a minute. Let's do that all over again. Because I thought in my head while I was saying it, I was like, was it her apartment or was it like a hotel? Because why does Bella have an apartment in Monument, Colorado?
Maybe she just like has a small apartment in
every place. Does she have apartments all around? I mean, she probably has enough money.
She definitely has enough money.
Okay, let me do that again. Sam and Dean break into Bella's apartment in Monument, Colorado to get the colt back, but she has tipped off FBI agent Victor Henriksen about their whereabouts. Remember that guy?
Classic Henriksen.
Making a comeback.
Man, but he maybe hate him for like 3 episodes, and I don't hate him after this episode.
I know.
It changes.
It does.
This episode is intense.
So intense. The police quickly storm the room and take the brothers into custody. FBI Deputy Director Stephen Groves arrives at the sheriff's station to prepare for the brothers' extradition, but reveals himself as a demon when he is alone with them. He shoots Dean in the shoulder. Poor Dean. His shoulder. Blood spurts.
It's always the shoulder, because even later, Sam gets shot. Well, he shoots himself in the shoulder. But it's always the shoulder! Like, I don't know how they have any shoulder blade left.
Are these people just bad shots, or they're just not aiming?
I don't know.
The figure will aim at the shoulder, will just take him down. I don't know. He shoots Dean in the shoulder, but then flees his host after Sam initiates an exorcism. The FBI agents who came to extradite the Winchesters are discovered to be killed, and their helicopter explodes. A demonically possessed Henriksen kills the sheriff, but the brothers then perform an exorcism. Which, by the way, I thought in that part that the sheriff was possessed because he was like trying to get the boys out. And then ended up being Henderson was possessed. And I was like, my mind was blown at that point.
But it made sense because at least then, like, because most time in possessions, you hear the person be like, I saw everything that I was doing. Please kill me now.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously Henriksen is now going to be like, shit, these boys are right.
Yep.
maybe they aren't as crazy, or maybe I'm now as crazy.
Henriksen now realizes that the brothers have been telling the truth about what they do and releases them from their cell. Using their expertise, the brothers protect the station against demons with devil traps and salt barriers. A horde of demons take control of the local population and surround the police station. Ruby appears in the station. She found a break in one of the salt lines and warns them that demons are now following Lilith, a powerful new leader who wants Sam dead. Ruby proposes a spell to safely kill the demons, but Dean declines the offer because it involves sacrificing both herself and the Virgin's secretary, Nancy Fitzgerald. After Ruby departs, they allow the demons inside. A recording of Sam reciting an exorcism plays through the PA system. One demon escapes before his comrades are exorcised. Henriksen promised the Winchesters that he will cover up what occurred and will report them as having been killed in the helicopter explosion. Shortly after the brothers leave, a little girl enters the sheriff's office and asks for the Winchesters. Revealing herself to be Lilith, she destroys the station in a blast of white energy. Ruby reveals this to the Winchesters and gives them hex bags to hide themselves from the demons.
This one was fun. It was like a whodunit kind of game.
Yeah.
Like, in a really bad way.
You didn't know who the bad guy was. Yeah. The toilet exorcism, though, did make me laugh.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah. It's like you're jamming his head in the toilet trying to get the demon out.
But yeah, this one. Mm.
Henriksen really thinks that the Winchesters are serial killers.
Yeah, for like a hot minute, they definitely.
Yeah, he's like, when he walks into the sheriff's station, he's explaining like these horrible criminals that are coming into the station and you won't believe the kinds of things they did. And I'm like, dude, chill out. Maybe he would just believe what they're telling you, you know?
I mean, but then again, you think about it and you think you're living a normal life. You're used to seeing some like batshit crazy stuff that people do,
right?
No problem. And these guys are like, oh yeah, no, I'm pretty sure it's not the first time Henriksen's heard demons did it, or like, yeah, this person was possessed. And he's probably like, okay, yeah, you guys are crazy, but you're definitely fucking killers.
Isn't that funny, though, how it's backwards? Like, he thinks that, like, demons and monsters and shit are crazy, but then the Winchester brothers think that people doing those kinds of things is crazy.
Well, I think it ties into that whole, like, it's more disturbing to know that a human can do that not being possessed.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't know. I think he's used to thinking that there's no rhyme or reason for things happening, and then finding out that there's actually, like, evil rhyme and reason.
Yeah.
Causing it to happen is crazier to him.
There's a lot of people that die in this episode.
Yeah. Let's start off with a helicopter crash. That was intense.
Didn't that whole scene remind you of Halloween 4, where everybody dies at the police station when Michael Myers breaks out?
Yes, it did. It made me think of that, and it made me think of like a weird Black Hawk Down moment.
Oh, yeah.
And all these poor guys.
Yeah.
They had no idea. They didn't know what was coming for them.
Nope.
Also, did they really need that many people to take in Sam and Dean?
Apparently, because they're horrible serial killers that you unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. I had a problem with the fight scene.
Why?
It was too jumpy for me. I couldn't focus on what was happening. Like, when they're fighting all the demons and then, like, demon heads are wiggling and my brain, like, went into overload and I couldn't comprehend what was going on.
It was a lot.
Like, all the cut back and forth was just, like, so fast, and I was just like, I can't even look at it.
I feel like this episode did a lot of jumping because they didn't want you to catch on.
Right.
Because, like, once I kind of started, wait, was this the first time we see the tattoo?
Yes. That's in my tiddly bits. This is the first time we see the anti-possession tattoos.
Which, by the way, I don't know. I feel like Sam's is way much closer to his throat than Dean's.
Yeah.
But I forgot about that, and then I saw it again and was like, woo, the tattoos!
The tattoos are here!
Aw,
yeah. Yeah, when Dean grabbed that bag out of the trunk, I'm like, what the hell's in this little bag? Is it like a hex bag? What do you have in this little bag? And then he starts passing out necklaces to everybody. I'm like, oh, what's that? Anti-possession. They're like, don't you need them? And they're like, nope. I'll show you my chest. Nancy probably got all excited. She saw a peck.
She did see a peck. Poor sweet, innocent little Nancy.
Oh, when Dean's like, nobody's killing any virgins.
I also want to know, like, why he had to say that. Because nobody, I think, at that point was like, let's kill a virgin. And Dean's like, nope, not happening. Not today. Not on my watch. Nancy, you're safe.
Well, he couldn't believe she was. He's like, nobody's a virgin.
Not everybody's a horn dog like you, Dean.
Exactly.
Sweet, innocent little Nancy's just doing her job.
Nancy wasn't going to be so sweet and innocent, though. She survived, remember?
I know. goddamn Lilith.
I know.
It's so weird because so I watch Sabrina.
Mm-hmm.
And Sabrina has their own version of Lilith.
Oh, they have a Lilith.
Who plays like a real big part in the series. She's almost in every episode. But man, she reminds me, like, she's pretty spot on to this Lilith too.
Oh, really?
They have the same kind of like personality, which I guess, you know, if you read the Bible, they tell you kind of what Lilith is like to give you a heads up. But what did you think of the introduction of Lilith?
I didn't really think anything of it. Because I remember, I think the first time I watched it, I was kind of like, holy crap, it's a little girl. You know, like the little girl is like this most powerful demon. But this time it didn't strike me because I already knew that. I think it's weird, though. Well, obviously, she's a little girl, so like she needs an adult. But she has like a handler that like goes with her as she kills people. I don't know. What did you think of Lilith?
I thought it fit her.
Yeah.
Because everybody thinks that Lilith is like the mother demon, so you expect her to be like this strong, powerful female.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like, I don't know, when I think of Lilith, I think of like a really powerful child.
Okay.
Like it, who appears innocent, because depending on what you read, Lilith was evil, but in theory, she wasn't originally like that.
Okay.
I don't know. I just feel like as a demon, she has the ability to change and deceive. And I feel like because she's the mother of demons, it's kind of like she's like the female Lucifer.
Okay.
Because you think about it, she was Adam's first wife. And because she didn't want to bend to him and be subservient and refuse to return to the Garden of Evil. I mean, the Garden of Eden. Jeez. Garden of Eden. She was coupled with the Archangel Samael. And that's when they were like, okay, well, we're going to make somebody who is subservient by actually using part of Adam. And that's when they created Eve from his rib. So, I don't know.
Just because she was being a strong woman.
Yeah, because she was a strong, independent woman.
They got to make her evil. It's not right.
That I don't know. I feel like it fit her, to me, at least for the introduction of Lilith.
Yeah.
Because obviously she changes later on, and she fits the more what we picture Lilith to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like that's the one thing about Lilith, is that you can picture what you want.
What you really, really want?
Yeah. It's kind of like that one part.
Picture Baby Spice. That's
I would say it's like that part in Ballad of Ricky Bobby when he's like, "Oh, I like the sweet 6 pound sweet ounce baby Jesus. I like to think about my Jesus as like my teenage homeboy." Like you pick your choose your Lilith.
Choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
Choose your own Lilith.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
So, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like Bella gets away with a lot of shit, and I don't appreciate it. For, like, no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's got away with a lot of stuff. This time, she literally showed up to fake Carrie and stole the cult without anybody noticing.
Yeah, and what's she gonna do with it?
And then she said, well, obviously, she's gonna sell it.
Yeah.
But what drives me crazy is, like, she got away with that. And then she got away with, obviously, finding out that they were on their way to tip off the police.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Does she
and then she got, like, she got out of death with the rabbit foot. And
yeah.
And then she got a death with the vengeful water spirit.
Yeah. All thanks to the Winchesters.
Yeah, literally, they have saved her, and she's done nothing but, like, fuck them every right way.
Yeah.
Except for the way that Dean right wants.
Yeah.
Hey, actually, I take that back. Except for the way that Sam wants.
But, yes, that's true. He's the one that had the dream.
That's so weird. Because you know at this point, like, she and Dean have, like, some weird pent-up sexual frustration. But then you have Sam, who's just like, hey, Bella. No, you're going to fuck my brother? Okay, that's cool.
I'll watch from the window like a creep.
Because, like, or, like, do you in that situation, like, have a weird, like, is that on the table to have a threesome? Because that's your sibling. And, like, I know that in Lonely Island's golden rule.
I was just gonna say that.
It's okay in a three-way, as long as there's a honey in the middle, there's some leeway.
Yeah.
But they weren't legitimate brothers, so I don't know. I feel like there's some fan fiction gray area in here.
I think as long as things don't touch, you're okay.
But, like, I also feel it's weird because, like, then you're seeing your sibling naked, which I feel like is different than seeing your, like, figurative bro naked. Because you already had that moment where, like, they're like, no, I don't need to see that. Can you please put some clothes on?
Right.
I mean, Sam was already, like, pretty much scarred in the eyeballs after seeing Dean get it on with somebody that wasn't somebody he wanted.
I don't know. Would he just focus on Bella then? I feel like this is a whole can of worms that you just opened
I
up.
did. And or would it be like Bella spends like one night with Dean, and then the next night she's with Sam, and the third night she's just calling the police on them?
Well, yeah, but how do you like flip a coin to see who gets sloppy seconds? Like, I don't know. 'Cause you wouldn't want to be the person after your brother.
Oh, and in that situation, you know Dean isn't gonna want sloppy seconds, and you know at some point Sam's gonna be like, "Well, you're gonna die soon, and there's no saving you, so like have your fun."
Yeah, I don't
I
know.
guess wait until Dean's dead, and then like get with Bella. I don't know.
Have no idea.
It's a weird, all's fair in love and war, I guess.
Oh, man.
But we'll find out that's not true.
Oh.
I was impressed with Sam's pre-recording of an exorcism.
Yeah, and this is their first time that the brothers performed an exorcism from memory when he exorcised the head guy. What was the head guy's name? Groves?
Oh, you're talking about.
The FBI deputy director Groves, who was the first guy that came in.
Okay, I was gonna say, because the one I was thinking was Reedy, the FBI agent Calvin.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Groves was the first one. But he dies.
He did die, but he'd probably been dead for months, so you know.
That seems to be the going thing.
It is
Demons
what
are
it
just like,
is.
fuck it, I'm gonna destroy this meat suit. You can have it back, but you're gonna bury it.
And it's dead. So, oh, the lightning black fog cloud of demons. That was a new thing.
Yes, and this is one that we see consistently later on.
Yeah.
This is like the new thing, which I like better than like the weird like bug thing that they had going on in the plane when
Yeah,
we
that was
first saw
weird.
possessions.
And we've had black smoke before, but this was like lightning, purple black smoke kind of thing.
Yes.
They're up in their game every time. They're like, we're just gonna add on to it.
I think that's what it is. They got bored. They were like, all right, we perfected the black cloud
Yeah.
and it no longer looks weird and we're only going to go through the mouth.
Yeah.
Let's add some lightning on that bitch. Smack
Extra
some
forceful
lightning.
now. Oh, Lilith's eyes are a different color than the rest of the demons. She has white eyes and not black
She does.
eyes.
I think that goes in time with the legions. Like what level of demon you are.
Oh my goodness. Let's get back to the legions.
Which is crazy because later on when we meet Crowley, he's not special.
He's
But
special in my
he's
heart.
the king of hell. And then you have Lucifer, who's kind of like head demon number one.
Yeah. I can't wait till we get to Crowley.
Crowley quickly became one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah, when people told me, like before I started watching it, and they're like, you're gonna love Lucifer and you're gonna love Crowley, and I'm like, but aren't they bad people?
Okay, so I had to do this. I had to, and we're going to kind of derail here. Okay, so I found a Reddit
Okay.
that lists what demon eye colors mean.
Oh, okay. This is a
So here we
good.
go. And it goes with that whole like, what level of demon you are.
This is a good tangent. Let's go.
Yes, okay. And I don't really talk about demons in my thing, so this is a good little sugu.
Okay. A sagoo.
I'm just going to segue my way over. Okay, white-eyed demons, Lilith.
Okay.
Are demon chiefs of staff.
Oh. Chiefs of staff.
Chiefs
Okay.
of staff. Yellow-eyed demons are demon army generals.
Oh, so Azazel was in the army.
Yeah, he was like the army chief.
Okay.
So Knights of Hell, which are the handpicked demons by Lucifer, to become demons, are also in that white-eyed, yellow-eyed.
Okay.
It's so fun. I love going on Reddit. If you haven't like deep dived into Reddit, there's some interesting stuff. So yeah, this person, so I'm just going with the first comment. The first comment is white-eyed demons, chiefs of staff, yellow-eyed demons, army generals, knights of hell, handpicked by Lucifer, red-eyed demons are the demon deal makers. Those are your crossroad demons.
Oh, okay.
And black-eyed demons are soldiers, thugs, henchmen, and minions.
Just everybody else, the people that do the dirty work.
Yes. White-eyed demons are more powerful and older demons.
Okay.
And the only question mark is the fact that, like, this person says that the knights actually have black eyes because Cain is pretty powerful, but he had black eyes.
Oh.
However, later on, obviously, Crowley is kind of special.
He
So
is
he has
special.
black eyes. I'm pretty sure Crowley has black eyes, right? Am I losing my shit?
I honestly
We
can't
haven't been
remember.
introduced, I'll say, we haven't been introduced to Crowley yet, and it's been so long since I've seen Crowley.
Wouldn't he have red eyes though? Because wasn't he a crossroad demon?
Well, his smoke was a different color.
Oh
He had
my
like
God.
red sparkle stuff.
Red, that just fits him so well.
Let's
Okay,
see.
maybe we
No,
should.
he had red eyes. He had red eyes. Crowley had red eyes.
Yeah, I couldn't remember him having the all black. So Crowley, Red Eye.
And Lucifer obviously had his like golden, red, yellow.
He had everything because he's number one.
So yeah, that's what I found out about the different demon eye colors.
I like that.
It kind of obviously changes throughout, but yellow eyes are kind of like Knights of Hell, demon general army guys. White-eyed demons are older, more powerful demons, sometimes chiefs of staff. Red-eyed demons, that makes sense, they're deal makers. And black-eyed demons, soldiers, thugs, henchmen, and minions.
I said thugs.
Thugs. I'm a demon thug. Let's
do
this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I could just picture Al Capone being like, okay, you want to do this? You want to steal my bootleg barrel? Okay. Red eyes. Or, like, black eyes. Like, okay. Actually, no. I feel like Al Capone would have the red eyes because he'd be the deal maker.
And then his thugs then would have out, the black eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on a tangent because I watched that Eastern State Penitentiary episode of Ghost Adventures last night. And
it's fresh in your mind.
And obviously they were talking about, before that I was watching The Comedy Store.
Oh, that was
so they
a
were
good
talking
one.
About, yeah, and they were talking about, obviously, the mob and, like, the yeah. guys that kind of took care of stuff. So, like, that would be, Frank Nitto.
Uh-huh.
For Al Capone.
I like that Jay Moore took his kid with him when they were going through The Comedy Store.
I like at the one point Jay Moore was just like, no, step away. He's conjuring shit over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, he's like, I don't want you to be near him while he's talking about that.
Meanwhile, then at one point Jay's like, you can't do it.
Yeah.
I was, yeah. I was kissing. I was like, Jay, I need you to calm yourself.
Then he starts provoking and it's like, well, wait a minute. Hold on.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. But yeah. So yeah, that would be like Al Capone would be like the Crowley and Nito would be like the black eyed thug. Not to be confused with black eyed children.
That's totally different.
Totally different. Was there anybody else? Anything else about this episode?
I don't think so.
I don't think I got anything else. It was like, I don't know. This episode didn't do too much for me besides being like, no. Okay, Henriksen, you're not bad. I didn't mind Henriksen from the beginning. I kind of liked him. I didn't hate him as much as I hated, what's his bucket?
Gordon. Yeah, I didn't mind Henriksen. I thought he was doing his job. He might have been a little off about, you know, what the brothers actually did, but that's not his fault. He didn't know.
Mm-mm.
But now he knows, and then he dies.
I know. I was so mad. I was just like, I was sitting there going, like, the guys could really use help in the FBI.
Yeah, and he seemed like he wanted to help them. Like, he wanted to be a part of this whole Hunter thing, and then dead.
Yeah, it just made me so mad, because I was sitting there going, you know what? Now they don't have to give out a fake number, and Bobby doesn't have to have, like, an 18th phone where he answers and has to be, like, the head of the FBI.
The labeled phones.
They could actually have somebody in the FBI that, if something comes up with their name, he just looks and goes, no, that's, you guys don't have enough, sorry.
Right.
Just drop it.
Well, yeah, he was gonna, he already told them they died, so, I don't know.
Which, for Dean, this is, like, death number 867.
Yeah, really.
Before he actually dies.
Dean was already dead.
He almost died. Sam's the only one that actually is dead. All right, so should we move on to your fun facts?
My tiddly bits.
Yes, drop some information knowledge bombs.
Which I just realized I typed in titty bits and not
no!
tiddly bits.
Fuck yeah.
So now today it's my titty bits.
It's okay. I was writing something the other day and I meant to write entitlement and it was entitled. I was like, okay, well, we're there now. Cool.
That's where it's going. Okay. The title is a direct reference to a plot element. Jus in bello means justice in war and refers to the guidelines for quote unquote fighting well once war has begun. As we mentioned before, this is the first time the anti-possession tattoos are revealed. Nancy getting a little peck action. This is an excerpt from an interview that Sarah Gamble did with Fox News. The Fox News persons, them. Those matching tattoos are pretty cool. How long has that been planned? And Sarah Gamble said, I remember talking about it with Ben Edlund last season while Kat was writing Born Under a Bad Sign. We agreed that if we were Sam, the first thing we do is take the anti-possession amulet and head to the nearest tattoo parlor. He reminded me of it while working on Jus in bello because breaking out the amulets was an important story point in that episode. So it stuck in there and it made for a nice moment. It's like, of course Sam and Dean would have matching tats. How could it be any other way? By the way, I'll be convinced we're truly a cult hit when fans get the same tattoo.
The funniest part is, so that list on Reddit, the next post was, finally got my tattoo. And I dated a guy who had one.
Yeah.
Shocking, I know.
if you, anybody out there has an anti-possession tattoo, tell us, please.
Share a picture, tweet it at us, because I want to see it. I want one.
Tweet at us, tag us on Instagram. I want to see your anti-possession tattoos.
You can't see it, but every time I say it, I'm like touching where mine would be.
Like on your peck, on your bub, on your bubby, on your titty bit.
My baby bubby.
This is the only episode of the series that includes both the season's recurring female characters, Ruby and Bella, though they never share any screen time. This episode marks the first time in the series that one of the brothers has performed an exorcism from memory without reading the words from a source. Dean attempted to do it in Sin City, but he, of course, couldn't remember the whole thing. Henriksen tells Sam and Dean he will be sending them to Supermax prison in Nevada until they have a trial. There's actually no Supermax prisons in Nevada. However, there is a Supermax prison in Florence, Colorado, which is less than 60 miles from Monument, Colorado, where the episode takes place. This episode marks the second time Dean has been shot in his left shoulder, both times by a demon-possessed person. The first time was in season 2, episode Supernatural Born Under a Bad Sign. This is our first appearance of Lilith. As we had said, this episode shares many similarities with a movie called Assault on Precinct 13. In the film, some cops, some prisoners who are about to be taken to prison, and a secretary are stuck in a small police station while being ambushed by gang members. In this episode, it's the exact same thing, but with demons. And also in this episode, Henderson says, "It's a siege." In the film, the sheriff says, "It's a siege, a goddamn siege." The end of the episode has a news report about Lilith's attacks on the station, resulting in everyone dying. Although everyone in the precinct did indeed die, it was not immediate. The horrifying truth would not be revealed until season 4. Ooh, I don't remember that, so it's gonna be new to me when we watch it.
Hey,
Sarah Gamble notes that they were finishing this script just as the WGA went on strike. Originally, the episode was listed as episode 11, but the airing order of the episodes was changed in late January as Eric Kripke felt it would provide a better end to what was likely to be a truncated season, or possibly series, as they had not been picked up for season 4 yet. The woman in the wanted poster on the pin board at the sheriff's office is Molly Baker, aka Mall Dog.
I like it.
And her reward was $10,000. I just thought that was a little fun fact of, you know, something in the background. And someone pointed out a goof in this episode. Despite the power being out at the time, the PA system still worked to broadcast the exorcism.
You know what? I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I just kind of went with it. I was like, this is great. And I was like, Sam has pre-recorded shit going. And
yeah. And another one someone pointed out is that Lilith is able to get into the police station at the end of the episode and blow it up. Yet there's a almost intact demon trap right in front of the door, which could easily be covered by some kind of carpet. Given that there are other demons, quote unquote, out there that weren't exorcised the previous night, and it would be easy to fix the demon trap, it made no sense that no one would have suggested fixing the traps and covering them with carpets. This would have made Lilith's presence obvious and prevented her from blowing up the station.
Would it have, though? Being that she's such a powerful demon, the original demon.
I don't know. Does she get trapped in demon traps?
That's the thing, because later on we find out that there are certain things that just kind of don't work all the time.
Yeah, not on every demon.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what someone had pointed out on IMDb. I thought it would be a little interesting titty bit.
No, I like it. It's just one of those things that, like, does it count? Because later on, like...
Yeah.
And we've seen demons get trapped in demon traps and find ways of, like, cracking them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because some are just so powerful that it...
Like, you think about the seven sins.
Mm-hmm.
When they attacked Sam, Dean, and Bobby in Bobby's house.
Yeah.
He cracked that ceiling one and was able to get out.
Right, yep.
And that was just him being trapped in the demon trap.
Yeah.
So maybe Lilith did some, like, hoodoo voodoo that let her ass in there.
Maybe. Yeah, because I think they wouldn't have thought of it, like, while they were leaving to make the devil's traps again, you know, to fix what they broke.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got.
That's it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just little tiddly bits.
All right. Well, here we go, guys. Sorry. All right. So I'm going to say my sources because I got them from some pretty legit places. So I used definitions.uslegal.com, harvard.edu, bbc.com, Britannica, oregonstate.edu, Internet Encyclopedia of Philosophy, Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, and I think that was it. Beyondintractability.org. Those are where I got all my information. So
I'll have you know that IMDb is a credible source.
I never said it wasn't. I never said it wasn't. Was it the fact that I have colleges today? Is that it?
Yeah, it's making me feel a little low right now.
It's not my fault, I think. Okay, so according to the guides.library.harvard.edu, jus in bello, aka laws of waging war, comes from, well, obviously jus in bello and some things that follow are Latin, which translate to laws of waging war. It is the body of legal norms governing battle and occupation. The conduct of individuals and units toward combatants, non-combatants, property, and environment. It can be punishable by customary international law and international legal instruments. What follows next is all part of the just war theory, because jus in bello is only one of three parts of the just war theory, the first being jus ad bellum, which is the right to war, which is a pre-engagement conduct of states and non-state actors that are considering to engage in war, considering the justifications of and limits to the use of force. Then the second part is the jus in bello, which is the laws of waging war, followed by the jus post bellum, which is justice after war, which is a body of laws, norms, principles that apply during the transition from wartime to peace. This is just war theory complete, and it's not to be confused with the Islamic concept of jihad or holy war. This is mostly just a Western concept. So that's just to start us off. Are you ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
All right, let's dive into just war theory. So it's based on Christian ethics by theologians and philosophers, and here's just a few that have dived into the creation of the just war theory. So there is St. Thomas Aquinas, who we've mentioned before.
I was going to say, that sounds familiar.
He has been mentioned before, and I meant to make a note of where I had mentioned him, but I didn't, because I'm the worst.
That's something I would do, like, hey, I know that name, move on.
If I find it later, I will have you cut and paste me. The problem is I have like 8 billion notebooks, so this might actually be in another notebook, but I don't know. I know that I've mentioned it before. Let's go with that. Okay, so St. Thomas Aquinas, he was from 1224, 1225, depending on what you find, to 1274. He wrote the Summa Theologiae, which outlined justifications for war and permissible acts to commit during wartime. Then there was St. Augustine, 354 to 430. He kind of created the idea of jus ad bellum, the right to go to war, and jus in bello, the rights of conduct in war. Then there's classic Plato.
Classic.
And his Republic, which was written by Thrasymachus, which says justice is the interest of the stronger, which is under the idea of the might is right idea. So the stronger you are, you have the right to act. And then there is Marcus Tullius Cicero from 106 to 43 BC. He was a Roman jurist, and he argued that war must be openly declared to be legitimate, and you must have just cause in order to declare war. So you can't just like attack somebody and be like, hey, I had the right to do it. You have to be like, I am going to declare war on because of this, and I have no other choice. So it is justified. Then there's Hugo Grotius from 1583 to 1645. He is a Dutch jurist, and he said that war is only justified if the country faces imminent danger and the use of force is necessary. So those all kind of went into the creation of the just war theory. The just war theory was created in an attempt to reconcile three things. One being that taken human life is wrong, which is the underlying idea. So what they're trying to do is justify that if you have to kill somebody, there's reason to. Two, states have a duty to defend justice and their citizens. And three, protecting innocent people and moral values requires the use of force and violence when no other means are out there. So the just war theory was created to provide a guide for all states to follow when creating and acting in potential conflict situations. This only applies to states, not to individuals. So if like you were to declare war on me, like you don't have to essentially like follow the just war theory because you're not a state. But if like Georgia wanted to declare war with West Virginia, they could do it, but they'd have to follow the just war theory. Okay. What it also does is provide a framework to discuss possible war, and it is not intended to actually justify war, but it's actually intended to prevent it, motivating states to find other ways of resolution instead of just jumping to war.
Oh, okay.
So basically,
so let's talk about it first.
So just war theory was used in response to, was reintroduced in response to the creation and introduction of nuclear warfare, and also came back to make its appearance in the U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War. So to go a little further into the three parts of the just war theory, to show you what states have to kind of like checklist before they actually go into war, then what they have to checklist in war, because like once you're in war, it's not that no rules apply. There are actual rules that you have to apply.
There are no rules.
There are no rules, which is, again, all fair in love and war. That's not true. There are actual rules you have to apply to in war, which wasn't necessarily a thing in, like, old Roman time when everyone was just, like, declaring war on each other for funsies.
For funsies.
I'm sorry.
S's
I was,
and S's and G's.
I was listening to a podcast the other day that's called Famous Fates, Movers and Shakers. It's a Parcast original.
Oh, okay.
And the one I was listening to was Julius Caesar. And in there, everyone was just declaring war on everybody to take something from each other. And it was all over the place. So the first step in the just war theory is the jus ad bellum, which, like I said before, is the right to war. So this is your pre-engagement conduct that you have to follow.
Okay.
So in order to get to the war start, you must have just authority or competent authority, which is initiated by political authority within a political system allowing for distinctions of justice, which is what ties it to states, not to individuals. This does not include dictatorships such as Stalin or Hitler or deceptive military actions. Once you have just authority, you have to check to see if you have just cause. So you must be able to show that wrongs have been committed by one nation against you, for which war is the only answer, which also could be the defense of your common good. So it means that the only way to actually be able to have just cause is you have to show that something has been committed, like somebody has attacked you, and the only way you can answer is by going to war to protect your people. Examples would be invasions. And the other thing that you have in order to get to the beginning of war is just intent or right intention, which sets the limit to the extent of war, meaning you can't just declare war. You can declare war on who has technically invaded you, but you're only to attack them. You're not to attack anybody else.
Oh, okay.
Now, there is also the last resort, which is only morally permissible when no other means to achieve the just cause is possible. You've exhausted all potential solutions, both political and diplomatic. You've given them the chance to come to a compromise. You've tried to negotiate to win a short solution so you don't have to go to war. But if all of that has been exhausted, then you move on to the next step, which is the jus ad bellum, which is your right to conduct in war. Now, that has its own little list. Because why wouldn't we have bullet points on bullet points?
This is a list maker's dream right here.
It really is.
To be able to check off all these boxes.
Now, it's true that some armies show no legal or moral restraints when it comes to actual rule of law in war. However, they're often held accountable by international law, which is obviously war crimes. Now, the just war theory is more of a philosophical idea on the basis of a legal process, but it's not completely like adhered to. So the jus ad bellum or the laws of waging war include proportionality, which is the degree of allowable force used in war must be measured against the force required to correct the just cause, and it's limited by the just intention. So that ties back to the jus ad bellum, which is kind of why, like, I guess you need to make a list when you're about to go to war. So that usually means that the harms are proportionate to the goals the attack is intended to achieve. So you don't literally like overkill.
Okay. Just enough kill.
Yeah. Just enough, you know.
Got it.
Then there's necessity, which no use of unjust methods or this is also responsibility. So there's no use of unjust methods or weapons. So no torturing, no genocide.
Okay.
Collateraling, harming non-combatants is not really permissible. You want to do the least harmful means feasible. And then there, that ties into discrimination, which is targeting non-combatants is impermissible.
Okay.
So you are to not attack any kind of innocent means. You are literally only to fight an army or not to go into like towns and kill everybody around.
Right.
So a lot of the times they'll use the term soldiers, combatant, or civilian and non-combatant to kind of combatant equality, which is soldiers who satisfy discrimination, proportionality, and necessity, fight permissibly, regardless of what they're fighting for. They do not kill anybody else.
They stick to the rules.
Exactly. Now, later on, there was an addition. Obviously, a lot of this stuff changes as you go on, and they keep adding more things in. Such as after World War I, to tie into the jus ad bellum, they added there must be a reasonable chance of success in order to wage war.
Oh, okay.
Force must be used as a last resort, and expected benefits of war must outweigh its anticipated costs.
Oh, okay.
Added on in jus ad bellum is the rights of soldiers, meaning that soldiers do forfeit some of their rights when they assume a combatant status, but they do not forfeit them permanently, even if they forfeit them during war. Once a soldier has laid down his arms and surrendered, he assumes the status of a non-combatant and cannot be killed or attacked, which is why they say back in a couple other steps with necessity, there's no torture or genocide. Like if okay. a soldier surrenders, he surrenders and is therefore a non-combatant, he needs to be let go. His property must not be destroyed or seized unless it is imperative by the necessities of war. And it is forbidden to steal from prisoners of war or the sick and wounded, or mutilate or steal a corpse. The wounded enemy are to be collected and cared for.
I'm glad that you cannot mutilate a corpse.
Yeah.
Under this
under the rights of war, yeah.
Yeah, that's
nice. Now, combatants that are captured in battle, technically, according to the just war theory, should be treated humanely. They are entitled to basic human respect and to be protected against any acts of violence or intimidation. They cannot be tortured or forced to work in support of the enemy's war effort and must be provided proper food, shelter, and medical treatment. See, just war theory sounds great.
In theory.
In theory. So, the final step in just war theory is the jus postbellum. So, jus postbellum is what takes place after, which kind of ties into some of the things that were thought about in jus ad bellum. So that's, again, proportionality, rights vindication, punishment, compensation, rehabilitation. And it also involves respect. You don't spit on your enemy.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Find out what it means to me.
Yes. Nailed it.
Thank you. I'll be here all week.
So the just war tradition revolves around two basic ideas: justness in war and justness of the way that war is fought. And just because the war is over doesn't mean that you kind of put justness aside. So you got to impose obligations for after the conclusion of war. If obviously you don't want to kill everybody, you want to protect everybody, right?
Yes.
So there are 7 principles basically to the postbellum, which are proportionality and publicity, meaning that peace settlement should be both measured and reasonable, as well as publicly proclaimed, so that there's no gray area of what's happening after the war.
Okay.
The rights of vindication is the settlement should secure basic rights whose violation triggered the justified war. Relevant rights include human rights to life and liberty and community, entitlements to territory and sovereignty, which obviously if somebody invades, the rights vindication is getting them out and giving back the property and paying for any kind of destruction. Discrimination is the distinction needs to be made between leaders, soldiers, and civilians. In the country one is negotiating with, civilians are entitled to reasonable immunity from punitive post-war measures. So if it's dealing with the soldiers, then anyone who isn't considered a soldier, anyone who's considered a non-combatant, is not to be involved.
Okay.
Obviously, tying back to rights vindication is compensation, meaning that financial restitution may be mandated, subject to both proportionality and discrimination. usually whoever waged the war is going to be responsible for compensation.
Okay.
Punishment. So soldiers and political leaders from all sides should face fair and public international trials for war crimes. So if somebody were to torture somebody, that person would then be punished for it. They wouldn't be able to get away with it, but they would be subject to international trials for their war crime.
Okay.
And then rehabilitation. So that's the reforming of institutions in an aggressor regime. So trying to figure out how to not get to that point to rehabilitate the people that were involved in war, as well as those who thought that that was a solution. So in this, it kind of ties down to restoration of what has happened in war, safeguarding innocent people because they weren't even part of the war, respecting the environment, trying to put it back to the original way that it was, postbellum justice, and obviously soldier transitions from a life of war after seeing what they've seen to civilian life, and then studying lessons of the war to try and figure out how did we get there? How do we avoid getting there?
Okay.
And that'll lead to the formulation. Yeah, that'll lead to the formulation of the jus postbellum.
Okay.
Now, obviously, the just war theory kind of rears its head every now and then. Like I said, the U.S. entrance to Vietnam, obviously in World War II, they added some things on there. But a lot of people don't follow the just war theory.
No, really?
Shocking, I know.
Man, I thought this was like, you got to follow your list.
One of the most recent ones is so when the British Parliament debated in 2015 to join the war in Syria and Iraq, they kind of went through this whole thing. But that was the last time that it was really kind of used. So hopefully you learned a little bit about the just war theory.
I learned a lot about it because I didn't really know anything about it.
Thanks to the just war theory, certain things have kind of come out. So since the Peace of Westphalia in 1648, which was ending the 30 Years' War, there was a concerted effort in international law to develop binding laws of war and military codes of conduct, kind of like internationalizing the just war theory. And since the 1860s, there have been more written forms governing the conduct of war, including rules of engagement, which I'm sure a lot of people have actually heard of, more so mm-hmm. than the just war theory. So the rules of engagement for national military forces, the Geneva Conventions, which took from 1864 to 1949, and the protocols from in 1977, and various other treaties, agreements, and declarations limiting the means allowable in war, have all kind of tied into the just war theory, using it as a basis. The Hague Convention in 1899 and 1907, as well as the Geneva Conventions, attempted to regulate conflict and the treatment of prisoners of war and civilians by imposing international standards. During that time, principles were established by the conventions saying that targets should only include combatants and legitimate military and industrial complexes, meaning you can't bomb a neighborhood, you can bomb a military complex.
Okay.
And you can't just sit there and be like, oh, well, I thought that row of houses was a military complex. No, you need to do your due diligence. You need to research. You need to study before you actually make that ability. Otherwise, you're going to be faced with war crimes.
Yeah.
Combatants should not use unjust methods or weapons, and the force should be proportionate to the ends sought. Since the end of the Cold War, other military interventions have taken to perceived human rights abuses, such as in Somalia and Yugoslavia in the 90s. And this has actually led to an increased attention to human rights abuses and growth in international human rights law, meaning that people don't just toss human rights aside because you're in war. Those still need to be respected.
Awesome.
Who needs them? We're in war.
There are no rules, remember?
Everything's fair in love and war. but it all ties back to the just war aim of responding to serious injustice and reestablishing peace. It should never be just to, like, we're not doing it to conquer something else. We're not doing it to do this. You're doing it to end a conflict and reestablish peace. However, there's no consensus yet on just war theorists yet, and the implications for international law remain to be seen. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. I feel like this one got super heavy and super, like, sit down, open up your books, kids. We're going to learn about the just war theory. Don't worry. I promise next time will be a little bit more lighthearted because I'll be talking about ghost hunters. not the ghost hunters, but like ghost hunters. And I mean, I'll talk about, okay, you know what?
I'm sure
when we get there.
I'm sure they'll be there.
I mean, they're definitely going to be there because I'm going to talk about the history of ghost hunting and stuff, but I'm not going to tell you exactly what yet because I haven't finished my notes.
I already have some things written down about ghost hunters.
They were my OG. That was my jam back in the day.
Hell yeah. They're still my jam.
For those who joined us on the Hunter Happy Hour, they got to listen to all of us just word vomit about ghost hunters and then the Roto-Rooter truck and everything else and Taps.
Classic Taps. All the other ghost shows that came out of it. How Discovery Plus stole all the ghosty shows.
Did I tell you about meeting some of the ghost hunters?
Yes.
Steve Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. I met Steve.
That's my man. Steve's my man.
Who was it? It was at Scarehouse. They brought in the ghost hunters because they were going to do a quick investigation because the old building in Aetna where Scarehouse was is haunted. But they were late because obviously Steve is too afraid to fly.
Mm-hmm. And of spiders. What if there was a flying spider? Oh, shit.
Oh, dear. Let's not talk about that. but they only brought in, obviously, Tango and Steve. And then they brought in, and I never remember her name, but she was not very nice. Not Amy.
Chris.
Yeah. She was real standoffish. I wasn't a fan of her. And Tango's dad was there.
Mr. Tango?
Yeah. So it was funny because I went in and I got them to sign my printed out ticket and everything. And like, I kind of word vomited at Tango because that's my man. And Steve was very nice. He was kind of quiet and taken back. Chris was just not having it.
Have to fight over anybody.
No, but it was so funny because I obviously was waiting in line and Mr. Tango was kind of standing off to the side. So like at one point when I passed him, I was just like, I saw you in the episode. I love you. You're so nice and funny. And like, he was just like, well, somebody recognized me.
You're like, Bruce, Mr. Tango, I love you so much.
Good times. Classic times.
And they love Disney too, Dave and Steve.
Yep.
It's meant to be.
All right. So next episode.
Ghost Chasers,
which is funny because it's episode 13.
Yep.
And it is literally called Ghost Facers.
I love it.
I also feel bad because it had an initial release date because obviously this is the one that came out after the whole shindig went down.
Yeah, after the strike. Because
ironically, supposed to be released the day that Usain Bellow came out. Mm-hmm. But it ended up airing 2 months after.
Yep.
So this ends our streak of posting when the episodes come out. Parting is such sweet sorrow.
We tried.
We had it for a moment.
We tried.
You know what, though? I'm happy that Valentine's Day, we got the trickster. So you know what?
There you go.
Whatever happens, happens.
Okay. But. So we will come up with a day for our March Hunter Happy Hour. I'm assuming it's probably going to be around St. Patrick's Day because
it's mid-month. That seems
it
right.
It is mid-month.
I've already made a promise. It's going to be a Jameson cocktail.
It's for Nikki's birthday.
It is. It is.
What's the other thing? The buy me a coffee.
You guys don't have to.
No, just throwing it out there.
If you have any extra, and I actually was going to talk, you can cut this out if you want to. I was going to talk to you eventually about, obviously, Supernatural and the boys are really big into like mental health awareness.
Uh-huh.
So I was going to look into a couple of, especially with the pandemic still going on and people having issues, looking into a potential like charity.
Yeah.
That maybe we can run a thing for a month where people can potentially go donate or we can collect money and then donate in the podcast name.
I love that idea.
But that was an idea I literally was driving today and thinking about. I just think that'd be really cool.
I love that idea.
Okay. Well, obviously we'll work out the details.
Yeah.
But I'll start researching that then. Because I know Mental Health Awareness Day is like October 10th. It's close to your birthday.
Oh, sounds good to me.
Okay. Follow us on Instagram. Share us. Keep sharing it. Oh my God. We hit 600.
Oh, yes. We have 600 followers on Spotify.
600 followers.
On Spotify.
Yeah, and that's thanks to you guys. Obviously, sharing us really, really helps put us out there because, I mean, we can keep sharing them to our friends and family, but at this point, I think they're following us and all of their alter egos are following us, and we've run out of people.
We hope they're following us.
Oh, my dad's following us. Forced his neighbors to follow. I'm working on a whole cul-de-sac here.
I like it.
I'm like the adult Girl Scout who's just like, buy my cookies, follow my podcast.
There you go.
What if I started selling salt?
Oh.
Protect your walkways and your house. Follow my podcast.
I'll throw in a bundle of sage. Here you go.
For anybody that gets in before you can kick them out. Sage and salt. Sage, then salt. Kick them out. Keep them out.
Never invite anybody into your house, kids.
Yeah. Don't play with Ouija boards.
Nope. Bad news all around.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
We love you. And we will see you guys next week. Big shout out and prayers to everybody in Texas right now, especially if we have anybody listening in Texas.
Yes.
We hope you guys are safe. We hope you guys can try and stay warm. For those that aren't living in Texas who potentially can help out, I'll try and tweet out a link to a couple places that people can either donate or share to help our friends in Texas and the southern states out, because it's cold and we're all kind of in a rough time right now, because 2021 was just like, hey, so there's still a pandemic, but also here's a bunch of cold weather and snowstorms.
Yeah, the gift that keeps on giving.
So yeah, please, prayers out to any listeners and people, everyone in Texas right now who's still without power, who are still cold, who don't have water or in boil water advisory. We got to stay together. We're a supernatural family.
That's right.
We got to keep helping others and saving others. It's a family business, guys.
We have to. It's what we do.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Balls, a supernatural podcast with Lizzie and Missy. If you want more, follow on Twitter and Instagram at SBNBallsPod or email SBNBallsPod@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe and follow Balls on your favorite streaming service.